How do you measure true success? What can we learn from a slave about the meaning of success? Stay tuned. Renewing Your Mind Weekend Edition is next. Welcome to this weekend edition of Renewing Your Mind with teacher and theologian Dr. R.C. Sproul. Dr. Sproul is also the minister of preaching and teaching at St. Andrew's, a Reformed congregation in Sanford, Florida. Turn on the television and see all the gurus who have learned the secret of success. For a small fee, you can learn how to make it rich flipping real estate or day trading in the stock market. But of course, results may vary, but success isn't always measured in dollars and cents. This is something Joseph had to learn while he was in Egypt. What does it mean to be a successful Christian? Are you currently enjoying it? What can we learn from the life of a Hebrew slave about true success? Today, as we continue our series on the life of Joseph, Dr. Sproul will revisit yet another tragic event in Joseph's life that God used to reveal His mercy. With more on that, here's Dr. Sproul with today's lecture, True Success.
As we're studying the life of Joseph, we've seen the terrible predicament he found himself in when he was the steward of Potiphar's house, and Potiphar's wife relentlessly pursued Joseph in trying to seduce him. And yet, Joseph resisted this, saying, "How can I do this thing, this great sin and wickedness against God?" And in her desperation, we recall that she grabbed him physically. And when Joseph fled from her presence and ran outside, that he left his garment in his hand when he fled. And so we read in verse 14 of chapter 39 of Genesis what Potiphar's wife did. We read that she called to the men of her house and spoke to them, saying, "See, he has brought into us a Hebrew to mock us. He came in to me to lie with me, and I cried out with a loud voice. And it happened when he heard that I lifted my voice and cried out, that he left his garment with me and fled and went outside." But we see what she's done. Her vanity has been crushed by Joseph's rejection. And so now she accuses him of attempted rape. She said, "He came at me, he wanted to lie with me, and I screamed. And when I screamed, I scared him off. But he left his garment behind when he fled for safety." Now, she's telling this to her servants. And she makes it clear that the fella who did this was not an Egyptian. Race and ethnicity is brought into the accusation. You only have to think of American history and imagine that this is a white woman and a black slave. And the white woman tells her white foreman that the black slave has tried to rape her. Prejudice now moves into high gear. See, they sent a Hebrew to mock us. She makes a big deal out of Joseph's being a non-Egyptian. He's not one of us. Who are you going to believe, me or him? It's incredible how contemporary the Old Testament is in its description of human events. So she kept his garment until his master came home. And then she spoke to him with words like these, saying, "The Hebrew servant," there again, the ethnic identification, "the Hebrew servant whom you brought to us came in to me to mock me. So it happened, as I lifted my voice and cried out, that he left his garment with me and fled outside. So it was, when his master heard the words which his wife spoke to him, saying, your servant did to me after this manner, that his anger was aroused. Then Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were confined. Now, we wonder, again, why he didn't have him executed. And I'm only guessing at this point. Is Potiphar had to know his wife. And he also knew Joseph. And though Potiphar's anger was aroused initially, that would indicate that he believed these false charges. After all, she had the evidence there. And you can imagine why he would be angered. First of all, his wife has been violated. But not only has his wife been violated, but she's been violated by a slave. And not only has she been violated by a slave, but she's been violated by a slave upon whom Potiphar had granted all kinds of special privileges and favors. I can imagine Potiphar saying, I trusted this kid. I trained him. I took him into my house. I gave him responsibility over everything I have. And this is how he repays me. This is how he shows his gratitude. He makes a move on my wife. And again, you wonder, why didn't go out and have him killed? Instead, he is placed in prison. There's another interesting note in chapter 39, verse 19 and 20 of the Geneva Study Bible. It reads as follows, though Potiphar's anger may have initially been directed at Joseph, his subsequent action indicates that he doubted his wife's accusation. Attempted rape of the master's wife by a slave would probably have earned a death sentence. But Joseph's punishment, that is, confinement with the king's prisoners, was relatively mild. Now, again, it may have been relatively mild, and mild compared with a death sentence, but it certainly was not a pleasant confinement for Joseph. Now, how does God reward Joseph for his obedience? Well, the simple answer is, he had him thrown into prison. You might come to the conclusion from reading this story that righteousness surely does not pay. I wonder how many times Joseph asked himself the question, well, if I would have gone along with this woman, I wouldn't be in this predicament. I would still be enjoying the status that I had in Potiphar's house, and instead I'm rotting in prison. I wonder how many times he thought that. I think if that had been me, I would have thought about it often. But I wouldn't be surprised if the thought never entered Joseph's mind. As we see his conduct and his character in prison, we see that there is anything but an expression of hostility towards God for his circumstances. And we read that after Joseph's master put him into prison, and he was in the prison, verse 21 says, but the Lord was with Joseph. That's the second time we've heard that statement made. The first time was after he was sold into slavery and delivered into Egypt in exile from his home and from his family. We were told the Lord was with Joseph. Now Joseph's situation takes a turn for the worse, and he's thrown into prison where his abandonment seems to be complete and his solitary confinement seems to be absolute, except that the Lord was with him. And we see in this story not simply the fidelity of Joseph in the midst of all of these difficult circumstances, but even above and beyond that, we see the fidelity of God. That God is promising his presence to this man, and he does not depart from Joseph. Whether it's in slavery or in prison, God is there. That's an extremely important point for us to remember, because so often in today's environment, with the health and wealth and prosperity preachers out there telling us that if you're a Christian, you will never suffer, you'll never have pain and so on, which is just a lie. And even a cursory reading of the scriptures reveals that it is a lie. And we should never be deceived by it. God does not promise us freedom from pain and persecution and tribulation and suffering. On the contrary, He promises that we will have that sort of thing happen to us. What He promises is His presence. And here we see it demonstrated in the circumstances of Joseph. Again, we're told in the New Testament that by Jesus that we are called upon to provide ministries of mercy, to clothe the naked, to house the shelterless, to feed the hungry, and what else? To visit those who are in prison. I've told the story before of the first time I was ever in a maximum security prison. It was in Minnesota. And I was there with Chuck Colson. Chuck was preaching to inmates. And there are different levels of security in the prison system. This was the highest level. You had the most hardened criminals in the world contained in this place. It was a frightening place to be. And Chuck preached to about 400 inmates in this old ratty auditorium. And when the service was concluded, there was a row of guards who escorted the prisoners back to their cell blocks and made those of us who were the visitors stand back and away. And they sort of then, after they herded the prisoners out of the auditorium, formed a phalanx from the auditorium to the exit chamber of the prison, because we had to go past the ends of cell blocks. And when we started in to leave the prison, these cell blocks at the ends of them, which were barred, of course, were filled with throngs and throngs of prisoners screaming and yelling and banging on the bars, yelling for Chuck. And they were reaching their hands through the bars. They wanted to touch him. They wanted to shake his hand. They wanted to thank him for coming inside. And Chuck and I were walking together, and he looked at me and smiled, and he said, "Let's go." And we just walked right through these guards. They didn't try to stop us, and went right up to the bars. And these guys are reaching through and grabbing us and shaking hands and crying and all the rest. And Chuck turned to me and he said, "The Republican National Convention was never like this." I got a great kick out of that. I thought that was a tremendous moment for those men on the inside. And what we discovered when we went into that prison was that God had been there before we were ever there. And God was in this prison with Joseph. Well, what happens? But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy. Now, it doesn't seem like he's getting a whole lot of mercy. He's not getting any justice. And he gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. Just as when he was sold into slavery, God blessed Joseph in that Joseph won the favor of Potiphar. Isn't it interesting that every time Joseph is shown favoritism, he gets in trouble? He was in great favor with his father, Jacob. He was in the favor of Potiphar, and now the warden of the prison looks kindly upon Joseph. And you wonder what it was about this young man that other men found him so attractive. Not, of course, in a sexual way, but in a manly way. And again, I think we're seeing the manifestation of not only of Joseph's personality and of his character, but also of his skills. That even in prison, he begins to use the gifts that God has given him for leadership, for management, and for administration. So the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners who were in the prison. It's the same thing that happened in Potiphar's household, that Potiphar had delegated that authority to Joseph to be in charge of the whole household. Now the warden makes Joseph in charge of the whole prison. And whatever they did there, it was his doing. The keeper of the prison did not look into anything that was under Joseph's authority, because the Lord was with him, and whatever he did, the Lord made it prosper. Again, this is an exact repetition of what was said of Joseph when he began to manage the affairs of Potiphar. He managed them so superbly that the person to whom Joseph was answerable stopped bothering to supervise him. Nobody was looking over his shoulder. And why? I mean, the reason is given, both in terms of his management of Potiphar's household and his management of the prison. Everything that he did prospered. He was better at the job than the warden was. What was the warden going to tell Joseph to improve Joseph's performance of managing the prison? This was the best run prison in the world when Joseph was put in charge. And I think anyone who's been in the role of being a foreman or supervisor, an executive or manager of any kind, dreams of having employees like that. That you can delegate responsibilities to them and forget about it. You don't have to keep coming back to them and say, did you do this? Did you do that? Did you follow up on this, that, and the other things? How many things fell through the cracks? There are certain people who perform so well at their jobs that you don't have to check on. I remember once when I was visiting a businessman in Kansas who was extremely wise. And he was asking about our ministry and wanted to know about our staff and how well they performed. This was years ago. And at that time, he said, how many employees do you have who work at Ligonier that you have to hold back? And I thought for a moment. I said, I don't have anybody that I have to hold back. He said, that's why you're struggling. He said, you need to find some people working there that you're going to have to put restraints on, that you're going to have to slow them down, that you're going to have to hold them back. That's what kind of person you want to have working with you. I said, gee, I never thought about it like that. Now, if that same man asked me that question today, I would say, we have lots of folks in our operation that run at top speed, and you don't have to chase after them and kick them in the pants or set up all kinds of artificial standards for them to do the job. We have a fantastic staff, and we really do. And we're the envy of many a Christian organization where people come in here and say, where did you find people like that? Well, it wasn't easy. It wasn't done overnight. But it is a sheer delight to have people that you can trust to do a job. And isn't it great when we find them? But isn't it better if we are them? If we are that kind of person that doesn't have to be beaten with a stick and prodded with all kinds of artificial things in order to do the kind of job worthy of our vocation. And so again, we have to notice that whatever circumstance Joseph finds himself, to use the phrase from the hymn, he gives of his best to his master. Wherever he is, he does his work to the glory of God. And no job is too menial or too low for him to apply his energy in this way. And this is because, I'm convinced, of his singular relationship with God. And so the scriptures tell us again that the Lord was with Joseph, and whatever he did, the Lord made it prosper. Joseph was in prison by the providence of God. And the success that Joseph finds in prison is not simply a result of Joseph's own ability or of his own energy, but again, it was the Lord who made him prosper. If anybody lived the Puritan ethic, it was Joseph, who understood that he was to do everything in his power to the glory of God, but it would be God who would bring the increase. It would be God who would bring prosperity. We are told in our own American heritage that one of our inalienable rights granted to us by our Creator as an endowment is the pursuit of happiness. I've often wondered why that ranks right up there in the historical language along with life and liberty. The pursuit of happiness. I was with John Piper recently in a conference situation, and he made reference to the 23rd Psalm, and he got a little bit agitated when he referred to the closing verse, surely goodness and mercy will follow you all the days of your life, and so on. And he was agitated because he said, that's a mistranslation. And it's found in almost every edition of the Bible that it's not that mercy and goodness will follow after this person who is under the tutelage of God, but the verb there in Hebrew means to pursue, to chase after. And that this is what we're seeing here in the life of Joseph, that God's mercy follows him wherever he goes, chases him. He can't outrun the mercy and goodness of God. And that's what it means to submit to the providence of God. Wherever we are, we can know not only that He is there, but that He is pursuing us with His mercy and with His goodness.
You're listening to Renewing Your Mind with Dr. R.C. Sproul. Stay with us. Dr. Sproul will return in just a moment with the rest of today's lecture. How can you be sure that your faith is biblical faith? How can we be certain about God's promises? Is it possible to lose your salvation? These questions have their answers throughout Scripture, but in the book of Hebrews, we find them brilliantly displayed, giving us confidence and assurance in our journey of faith. In Themes from Hebrews, R.C. Sproul explores the difference between faith and credulity, the enigma of Melchizedek, Christian maturity, the heroic faith of Abraham and other Old Testament saints, and most importantly, the supremacy of Christ and the better covenant He established for His people. You can get your copy of Themes from Hebrews by calling 1-800-435-4343. Again, that's 800-435-4343. Our resource consultants are available Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Time. So call now, or you can go online to rymoffer.com. That's RYM as in renewing your mind, and the word offer.com. Again, that's RYMOFFER.com. Today's message, True Success, is the fifth lecture from a 20-part series entitled The Life of Joseph. Joseph's story is one of tragedy in the midst of a virtuous life, as well as God's healing power of mercy, forgiveness, and restoration. In this series, Dr. Sproul gives an in-depth look at this early hero of the faith. This entire 20-part series is available on 10 CDs for $21.60 plus shipping. To order your copy of The Life of Joseph, call one of our resource consultants using our toll-free number, 1-800-435-4343. Again, that's 1-800-435-4343. You can also log on to our website at ligonier.org. That's ligonier.org. That'll bring a close to this weekend edition of Renewing Your Mind. Thank you for listening. Be sure to join us again next weekend as Dr. Sproul returns with our study of the life of Joseph. You're listening to Renewing Your Mind, Weekend Edition, the listener-supported radio outreach of Ligonier Ministries in Orlando, Florida.